Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Yes, yes, y'all. My name is M.I. Abaga, a.k.a. The Guy, a.k.a. Mr. Incredible, whatever you want to call me. I just had an amazing time because I sipped tea with Timmy Son on Tea with Tay. Stay tuned.
Hey, guys. Welcome to another brand new episode of Tea with Tay Pod, the only podcast that brings the tea acidity hot. And speaking about tea, this podcast is proudly sponsored by my faves, Lipton. Now, today, my guest is a singer, songwriter, and one of the best rappers to ever do it. His name is Jude Lemfani Abaga. Yeah, you guessed it. It's Mr. Incredible himself, M.I. Abaga. Please put your hands together for my guest. M.I.
I go join my own hands. I clap for you. Hey, bro.
This has been a long time coming, though.
Yeah, man.
I've been chasing you. You know you're a superstar, so you don't give us time. You know, I'm not available. But I understand that you're working a lot.
Man, I've just truly, I'm such a fan of your pod. I've been looking forward to doing it. My wife too really loves you, you know.
I love her
and
too.
She loves, she loves your pod. I'd even tell her about it because she would have forced me to do it like 4 weeks ago. She would maybe travel back to Nigeria to come out with me. But
I know I'm talking to when I need to get you to do stuff.
But I'm glad to be here, man. Looking forward to the conversation.
I'm happy that you're here. How are you these days?
I'm okay. I'm in a great place in my life, and I understand why they say that as you get older, life becomes better. You know, so I'm really like I'm really at a phase in my life where things are very clear. Things are very, I'm very purposeful, you know.
Yeah.
It's like spend my time doing what I want to do, you know, to achieve what I want to achieve. It's great. How are you?
I'm great. I just got back from holiday.
Come on, where did you go?
I went to Paris, I went to Amsterdam, I went to London, I went to Belgium.
Which of those cities has the best tea?
I think Paris. I just like Paris. I just, you know, I thought I was going to like London. I'm not saying this so that London people can come for me. But I actually think that I like Paris a lot. So I'm going to learn French because of how much I like.
Yeah. It's so much style in everything in Paris.
Yeah, the aesthetics, you know.
Je ne sais quoi.
The air, the je ne sais quoi. The oomph, you know. Paris has that. You know, in the morning, I'm out there eating croissant.
Yeah, you definitely have Parisian vibes.
Yeah, you know. And this script right here. You know, when I was on holiday, right, in the morning, I would leave my hotel. So there's a cafe that I usually go to, you know. It's 10 euros, right? So 10 euros can get you like croissants.
That's like 10,000 naira. I've been at 15k now.
Yes, now how much do you charge for restaurant for you? If you go cafeteria, you know how much you go spend for that kind of thing.
Truly.
Yeah.
Truly. Good point.
So like, I would go there in the morning, and this is, I'm so sorry guys, I'm going to get to MI, but I would leave in the morning. As I'm entering it, I feel, you know, maybe I feel very Parisian, you know, as I'm walking in and they're serving me the bread and sunny side ups, the runny eggs. I'm just like, this is my life.
Shut up,
Emma, you would know. You know? They don't know. No, they've never been.
They go off our camera and the podcast. They go tell you at the end of the podcast, bro, you're this, you know, sorry, camera had a fault.
Oh, no, but I had a good time. I honestly think that the only way that I can survive as a creative right now is if I take regular breaks. And that's why I do that.
I don't even think that we should think about it as creatives. We shouldn't think about our breaks as breaks. Like, from the corporate world, like, one of the top CEOs, Jeff Bezos, says that the most important thing that he does with his time is thinking. Now, most creatives, when they're thinking, they think they're not working. They don't count it as work. You know, when you're watching videos, when you're replenishing yourself creatively, mm-hmm. you know, but you have to do it. Like, sitting down, creating content, talking to people, it takes, like, you're giving of yourself. And replenishing that is actually an act of work as well.
You know, the truth is that even when I'm on holiday, I'm actually not on holiday because I'm constantly thinking of my contents. And thinking is also a stressful process. I need to sit down as a creative and not think. How about that?
Like, really, truly, in every 2-week period, take a 2-day break where you turn off your phone and you don't do anything. You see that when you come out of it, everything is so much clearer.
So my issue is that my mind works on over, like, even when I'm sleeping, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Once I wake up, my thoughts are already all over the place, and I literally have to pray and quiet it. Yeah. Please, let's get into this podcast because we're like,
I told you,
45
you
minutes
we start gisting about other things. Yeah. Now.
But you know, my best episodes are episodes that the guest just comes and we just vibe. Just, like, we're not exactly following any guidelines and everything, but I know that that's what you're going to give me on this episode. Yeah. You know, we know Mr. Incredible. We know the guy that's given us the greatest rap albums. I don't listen to rap, but I listen to you, right? So I feel like you're very interesting, but we don't know who Jude is. I mean, your family might know, your close friends might know, but to the rest of Nigerians and the world, who is Jude? Who would you say Jude is? Who's Jude as
a son,
a family guy, you know, a friend?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question, huh? I don't even know that I know the answer to that. You know, 1 year into marriage, I realized, like, halfway into the marriage, that my wife was describing me in a way I've never heard myself. And I was like, oh, she's the first person that's had enough time with adult Jude to be able to even tell Jude things. You know, sometimes you're thinking, and when you're thinking, what is on your windscreen as a human being is what you're thinking about. But you're not aware of how you're acting as you're thinking. You know what I'm saying? And it's only someone that's with you that can be like, you know that you always do this thing. And then you have to be like, oh yeah, I do that thing. And so having, like, a partner, a spouse, mm-hmm. makes you see yourself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized I don't really know myself, like, in that way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm evolving. But I would say I'm a shy person, first of all. I'm a shy person. Around friends, I tell a lot of jokes, you know. I can be loud, I can be like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think people don't see that side of me, the humor, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of times on Twitter, when I get in trouble, I'm trying to be funny and sarcastic. And Nigerians are like, no, this is what you meant. Bah, bah, bah. And I just, you know, I'm chill. I'm very low maintenance as a person. Like, I'm in the house, I'm quiet. You know, I like ironing. I like reading.
You like ironing?
Yeah, I like.
Hey, I should move in.
I sit on a balcony. So I sometimes when fans and stuff come and visit me, I'm like, man, I don't know if you want to meet. If you saw Emma, I don't know if you want to meet Jude, because Jude is at least in this phase of my life, you know. But it also goes with some of the things I'm doing now, as opposed to when I was younger. You know, when I was putting out them albums before I went into management at Chocolate City, that was a different. Am I, you know, parties, out, large crew, all that. So that's what I mean. You change so much as you go through life. And I think that the most important thing you can have as you look at, like, your whiteboard of your life is to hold your eraser, because you may need to wipe things off and write new things, you know, as you go along. I hope that was a good answer. Did you learn anything about me in that?
Yeah, I did.
In that
answer. Makes sense.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you were raised in Jos.
Yeah,
tell me about that. Growing up in Jos,
J Town, G-Town is like, have you been to Jos?
No, I've never been. I've always wanted to visit, but I've just never had the opportunity. I've never been to the North.
I'm going
to
invite you. I have a project to Jos.
Yes, please.
Money saved me inside. But
Project
to Jos early next year to work with creatives and to help them gain some skills and stuff. But Jos, when you arrive, you're going to see it. It's a magical place.
I hear.
Magical. Bro, during summertime, they're like fireflies at night. You know those like little light, those things that have lights everywhere. They're butterflies. Yeah. They're like beetle bugs. They're apples, strawberries, fresh cucumbers everywhere.
Strawberries.
Natural in Jos.
Ah.
It's just a magical place. And the people are peaceful. They're kind. They're artistic. They are very loving. Very simple, you know. And so for a creative, it's like the best place to be.
I don't think Jos gets enough PR.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Because a couple of people have said this thing, but I'm like, this is not the narrative I have of Jos.
And I grew up looking at like music icons. Like, do you know who Dr. Panam Persipol is?
Yes, no, I mean, church boy.
Come on. And you know, he really did well in the South.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, so he was from there.
He's from
Panam. It makes sense. Panam
is a, like, he's not from Plateau State. But I think effectively all his career was from out of Plateau State. So I saw him. You know, like when you see an upcoming artist, I used to go to church and he would come and perform with his band. Then all of a sudden, this guy had the biggest song.
He was huge.
Huge. And he wasn't just the only one. There was one like iconic, like Islamic Muslim singer called Dan Mariah Jos. Icon of music. He plays this instrument called the Molo. Ding 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 ding, and he would be like, and just sit, like this huge icon of music.
Right.
And then I grew up with like a lot of other artists. P Square were coming up in Jos at the same time. P Square lived in Jos, man, their whole lives. They're Jos guys.
I'm able.
Yeah. It's crazy. The Jos is heavy out in this industry. You know what I mean? If you just think about the MI strain, it's MI, Ice Prince, Jesse Jags, you know, Chilly. Chopsticks, Grip Boys, Young L. Like, there's so many artists that come through that. And it was just magical music, very, very beautiful place. And then, of course, around the turn of the millennium, you know, these religious riots and uprisings started happening. I think the city's trying to bounce back culturally from that, but it's not lost any of its magic. It still has that that magic. It still has the potential, like most of Nigeria, you know. And it's a beautiful place, man. I can't wait for you to come.
I should come. I want to know what your childhood was like. You know, you were raised by Christian parents, first of all. Your father's a pastor. How did you end up being this
in the world,
like they say, you know? but I mean, you were raised in the church.
Yeah.
Growing up in the church is always different. And the kids that grew up in the church, we know them. And you're now a PK. So I'm trying to imagine what that was like, you know.
Yeah, my dad was like, when I was cognizant, he was a pastor at the very, very early stages of my life. But then he became an evangelist, which is a little bit of a transition, you know. An evangelist is like they're the Afrobeat stars of church. They're the ones that do stadiums. So very early on, I saw my dad do like crusades. I saw my dad.
He was on that level.
Yeah, I saw my dad meet Reinhard Bonnke.
Oh, I know Reinhard.
You know, go meet Benny Hinn. Go meet David Yonggi Cho, who are like church heroes.
Yes, yes.
That's what I just saw early on. My father just said, I'm going to South Korea and just hop on a plane. We and Jos were like, what? Going to the airport was a trip for us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because Jos is magical. So it feels like you have everything there. Then this guy, you know, in his early 30s at the time, would just be like, I am going to Israel. Hop on a plane, come back. And the other thing about it is that church communities also at that time, at that phase in the economy of Nigeria, were also the perfect place for young people. Like that's why a lot of, you know, people come from those church communities.
Yes,
a lot
yes.
of music, yes. a lot of family
yeah.
and friends around. So you have a lot of friends. So. That was very helpful. Of course, the question you asked about what happens when you start transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
My parents didn't really stress me about the music I was making. I think they'd seen me love music my whole life. But I will say that there were a lot of pastors. Some of them are even my friends now. But when we left Jos and started the Chalk Boys, I even heard one or two preached on stage that, oh, these boys, they don't join Illuminati. They've gone to the world. And even right now in Jos, I find a lot of young people that are very talented, that have global talent, that are struggling with that. But can I do this thing secular? Can I step out of church and do this thing? Yeah, so...
Is the church community that big in Jos?
It's the most massive community. So Jos is sort of like, you know, the higher north you go, both the Christian and the Muslim communities are probably more committed to their faith. The practice of their faith, the higher up you go in our country. So it has a very, very strong evangelical, you know, I was brought up in Ekwa, there's Cooking, there's Baptist, there's Catholic churches. It's very, very strong Christian community in Jos. Yeah.
So when did the music start for you? Was it in church or outside of church? I know that you had lots of musical influences. Yeah. Like I read, like, you know, you like the DMX and the Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
Also, being a church, a PK, were you allowed to listen to that? Were you encouraged to listen to that? When did the music actually start for you? Were you in the choir at some point? You know,
man, I was a star boy in the choir, man.
Energy.
Play drums. Even though there was a few people, I should actually use this podcast. You said the T, I mean, I should call names.
Mm-hmm.
People that treated, you know, Michael Jordan, the famous basketball player.
Right.
His Hall of Fame speech. Mm-hmm. When he got there to Hall of Fame, he had a long list of people. He said, you didn't believe in me when I was 5.
Yeah.
You didn't believe in me when I was 10. You didn't believe in me. So maybe I should do that here. But I was like star boy. I did perform. I every summer, I would gather my friends around. Some of them don't even like music today.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, you're going to play bass. You're going to do this. You're going to do this. We'll go and do a song. We'll prepare. We'll do the rehearsals. I would present it at the church. And
Christian music.
Mm-hmm. So along the way, if your heart is to love music, you start hearing some music that you're like, what is that? When I heard rap music for the first time, I remember one of my classmates, because again, I'm a pastor's kid. I joined secondary school, and a friend of mine called Emmanuel Bio was rapping a Heavy D song to me. Let it rain, honey, pop the umbrella. It has to go down smooth. I was like, what? And because my voice isn't great, my singing voice isn't great, I'm like, I found my thing, you know? From then on, a strong head. So by the time I started putting out music, my parents were already like, okay, we know this is our son's calling.
Really?
And we know him. Because I was also a little bit, I was very driven about what I wanted to do. Remember, I've seen my dad do great things.
Yes.
You know, I think this is part of the importance of what parents teach you without teaching you, right? So when I started, they were just like, okay. And I don't think they've listened to most of my music. In fact, early on when I started rapping, I wouldn't even use cuss words at all. You know, then by my mixtapes, I started and doing small.
So by that time, you were spirit filled. What changed? Spirit
filled. I became industry filled. You know, when you enter Lagos, industry will say, let me see your pure heart and let me say something about that. You enter the industry. Clean skin. You live with tattoos
my
and scars.
My brother. You know, you'll be exposed to things that you never thought that you could do.
Yo.
That's what this industry does to you.
Yo. You know how many moments I've had a moment where I'm like, are you guys trying to tell me that people do this? And they're like, yeah, everyone does it. I'm like, what? Like my virgin Christian pastor child brain coming to Lagos and being in this industry has been blown so many times.
Right now, I'm so humble. And I'm like, God, I'm broken before you because... You know that I came with pride of, you know, I'm coming from a church background. This industry is about certain things, but I, Temi-san, don't
praise
stand for those things.
Hallelujah.
The way I feel. You know, when Koramas I don't go sleep with Squire Mistress.
My bro.
The way I feel.
My bro.
And it just opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, you cannot really say that you're not something until you're exposed to that thing. Like,
I have one funny story I remember. One time in secondary school, I remember walking around the school being like, I'm so strong in my faith. Nothing can ever make me backslide in my faith.
Were you such a faith, like, because you're a PK, obviously.
Yeah, at different phases of my life.
PKs, that's, by PKs, I mean pastor's kids, right?
Yeah.
There's some PKs that try to emulate their parents. Then they're outright rebels. Which one were you?
I think generally my parents would see me and people around my family would see me as a good kid. I think generally. I'm largely the responsible type of first son.
Yeah.
You know? And even like even if you look at my career, it's not like there's really been like morally inclined scandal.
Yes.
I've sort of been like, you know,
clean slate.
Yeah, clean fairly, slate. Yeah. Relatively.
Yeah.
This is not to say, I mean, I'm talking about the narrative out there. This is not to say I'm as guilty of all things as most artists are, but I would say that just because when you're doing something like music and you become popular, just because it has a lot of conflict with faith, especially people, if you come from a place like Plateau State where people really practice it very seriously, there's always that conflict.
Mm-hmm.
But look, this is the way the world is. Right now, so I tell you the truth, that when I look at things now, I don't try to pick one option.
Mm-hmm.
I try to understand. I say to myself, there are probably two or three true options happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I've learned about life, that it's not either or. It's and. Like, both people are probably correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
But truth is one. Don't you think?
But truth is complex. You're right. It's one.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody may be contributing to the truth. So let's give an example now. You go back to that story of the blind people and the elephant.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's touching the elephant from different points. So somebody says this is a wall. Somebody says this is a snake. Somebody says this is a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody says this is marble. They're all correct. And the truth is one. But the truth combines all their perspective. Do you understand? So that's how I sort of look at the world now. When I look at something, I say to myself, like, okay, everybody's going to tell the truth to contribute to what the real truth is, which is probably a larger story that not all of them can see, you know, and that helps me understand it. So in that way, I say that, look, there's a deep complexity. If you take away faith, if you tell Christians not to make secular music, first of all, you're removing, let's start from Don Jazzy. You're removing Don Jazzy from music completely. Think about what Don Jazzy has meant to Nigeria and Afrobeat.
Mm.
It's complex. Can you, if you're his pastor now, go back in time. Can you tell Don Jazzy not to do secular music? Think about all he's contributed. Think about the lives he's changed. Mm. And all that. So it's a complex thing. Whereas the person that's having that belief in faith, can I tell them they're wrong? You know? So it's like, I look at the world sometimes, I'm like, it's complex, and that's the right way to look at it and leave it.
Fair enough.
So, yeah.
Tell me about uni in America. You schooled in America.
Yeah, I'll start in uni in Nigeria first.
Oh, you did uni in Nigeria too?
1 year. ATBU. 8 carryovers.
Where be that? Which school you got?
Bauchi. Bauchi, ATBU.
You know, go class. 8 carryovers.
My head was just in my creativity.
Right. And you're probably the guy that would never come to class but be in the studio.
I went to study the quantity survey.
Quantity survey. They go
I don't know. Up to now, I'm not sure I can explain.
My brother.
What quantity survey is. You know, I don't know if people have had this thing when you're entering university where they're just like, just enter this lane. Then you now just start entering the lane. You don't even know.
Do you know that that's how most of us went to uni?
Can you imagine how crazy that is? Think about the fact that you're competing against people in the rest of the world. When I went to America, my first year, the whole year, is focused on you picking what your course should be. They tell you to try different things. You have counselors to help you figure out this is what you should be doing. Meanwhile, in Nigeria, they just say, you're a quantity surveyor now.
So, but why quantity? Who picked it for you?
I wanted to do architecture, but my JAMB score wasn't high enough. So they're like, okay, just go to QS. And you know how it is now. Your father will agree with the dean, will agree with the lecturer.
So you just put him there after we change.
That's it. I was now in quantity surveying.
Do you know how I chose my course? I think it was my uncle that walked into the room that day. I said, I've picked you in luck for jam form. Say, what do you want to be? I want to be an actor. Seeing that mommy's not going to pay for anything that's not a serious course. Because my grandma wanted me to be an engineer. I said, from where to where? How can I be an engineer? You understand? So I picked law because it looked like the most lucrative, you know, thing that I could have gone with.
Did you do law school?
I did. I have a diploma. I just never went to collect it.
Chepetele.
So I went through diploma in law. And by the time I was done with the diploma, I said, God, if I continue like this, I will never be successful in life because I couldn't understand what I was getting myself into. That's how they moved me to history. By the time I was doing history, I never stayed in class because I'm like, what will I do with this history, God? Even the history, I don't remember. But I can tell you that all the things I learned from that history. Maybe not Mansa Musa. Mansa Musa finished. It was so funny. That I don't know how I was always smart, so I got by, but I just knew that, you know.
Yeah. And it's such a waste, right, for all us smart kids. Because imagine they gave you something. Imagine like...
Imagine I did creative arts.
Imagine. And you had a professor, like, on the state side, they would be like, you're so talented. Your professors would be like, look, what do you want to accomplish? Let's set you on the path. Let's connect you to this tutor. Let's take this extra course. Go do this internship. You know, they prepare you for the world. And I think that in our country, that's one of the things that when we fix, we're going to see the true potential of Nigerians. Because I don't know if there's like any nationalities out there that can compete with us in terms of that combination of culture, energy, and intelligence. But our systems here are holding us back so bad that it's really difficult for a young person to make it past by the time you pass through the system.
Yeah.
System don't point you, go like this. Meanwhile, road not like this. You understand?
You know, the fun thing about Nigerian young people, and I say it every time, that we're so resilient that we've always find ways.
Yeah.
I've never seen a country that has this much creativity and resilience in young people.
Yeah.
Because it's the same Nigeria where Nigerians or young Nigerians use social media to create jobs and opportunities for themselves.
Yeah.
We are so talented that, you know, if we were in an ideal country, right?
Oh, I have a question for you about social media. A Gen Z question.
Yeah.
What is this AI? But explain to me what's happening.
It's TikTok.
So what's happening? What, there's roses, there are all these things.
So I feel like those roses, and I don't do a lot of TikTok, but I know that I can infer that those roses, those things are points that they give. I think you can convert it back to money with TikTok.
So basically people buy like these tokens and they come on your live stream and they can give it to you. And then the person can convert it as money.
Yeah. So people work for that money. So all of that.
So is I'm asking for you to give me points, basically.
Yes. So I imagine
I'm
putting
out the MIAI. See, this is my entry point to TikTok. Ladies and gentlemen, because like 2 weeks ago, I saw this really beautiful.
I need to start this thing. It's crazy.
Then today not posted like
a slide
of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's like the Igbo one. There's like...
You know, Nigerians are so crazy. Yo, I love it. I love it so much.
I'm like, you were just talking about creativity. I'm like, we truly are like the goats of creativity in the world.
So I can't lie to you. Yeah. We are probably the most creative nation. Yeah, maybe Americans have a melting pot of different, you know, ethnicities and whatever. But Nigeria.
And now we still did there. Now we still did there.
It's crazy. I feel like maybe God allowed us to struggle like this so we can thrive. You know, because we don't go through struggle, right? And they get opportunity, they're gonna do the most.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
We are those people.
Yeah. I mean, we were even talking about it before the podcast, about how that balance of like struggle. You look at all you've achieved. You were talking earlier about like, man, the grind. I got to do this. I got to do that. Now we're talking about your like the level up. It's just more work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the price for doing well is more, more grind. But that shows you what struggle does. Is that struggle is actually a good thing. It's a perspective thing. It's actually a good thing because it means you're solving a problem.
Trails of trauma, but then struggle is a trauma. Some struggle.
It can be, but it's perspective now. Something happens to you. You can either say, this is a bad thing and my life is sad because of it. Or you can say, this is a good thing because when I overcome it, I'm going to be one of those people that have overcome this kind of thing.
Right.
And that's going to change me as a person. And it's... Look, the world is so unfair. There are people that the things that have happened to them are very, again, back to complexity, are very, very unfair. But I feel like almost any human being has the ability to change their perspective and turn something that's meant for bad to become something for good.
True.
You know?
I agree.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Nigeria and just coming. You started the music in America or you moved back to start?
Yeah. I was always doing music in America. And even when my grades were not doing well, one thing I was always working on was my music. Improving, listening, writing, producing. I was in a gospel choir in the U.S. I was a dancer. I was a DJ. I was a producer. I was singing in an a cappella group, a gospel group.
How did you finish school with all of this?
This is why I didn't finish. I had trouble. But it was really more about the finance, the financing of the tuition.
Right.
I think school fees at the time was like $20,000 a year. And so we sort of went...
still expensive now, Seth.
We sort of went on faith, you know? Got some money together, got some sponsorship, went there. Struggle. You can't choke by year three, year four. So I came back sort of like, let me come and reorganize, get some new scholarships, and then didn't get a visa, door closed. Bam. I'm now stuck in Nigeria.
Stop it.
Joss. And you know that...
You didn't get a visa back?
I because to be honest with you, my grades also at the time weren't showing what the visa person wanted to see. And I think... let me not make an excuse for them. Y'all fucked up. Y'all should have let me back.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. There's no MI if I went back to America.
Yeah, true.
It's no America. This is the thing about perspective. Like, I was dating someone at the time. I would have probably gotten married to her. White babe. You know what I'm saying? Don't bump picking 1-2 years. They go give go one place, settle down.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying? And now this other journey in my life where I was able to live and work in my purpose and make music and create albums.
But that must have hurt you at the beginning when you found out you couldn't go back.
It humbled me.
Right.
It humbled me. Because I came, you know when you come back first, you're IJGB.
Yes.
And then after a while, you're like,
I know they go back.
I know they go back. Was like, you know, that's I know they go back. INDGB.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new one. I like it, but then you become that.
Stuck.
And then you now have to, like, you've been 4 years somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And now you come back and you now have to, you know, most of my friends were in the US. So it was very humbling.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was in the US, to survive, the jobs I took, I was washing toilets, I was cutting grass, I was mopping floors, I was sweeping, I was doing a lot of maintenance, cleaning, taking out the garbage. So I tell artists, even up till today, that when you see me in the studio, when you see me on stage, I'm always mopping the floor. Like, I've never left that mindset since I left that place. So when I came back to Nigeria now, everything is collapsed. I immediately went and got a job. My first job was 9,000 naira per month.
In Jos?
In Jos, at an internet cafe. And what I was doing, I was working for 8 hours and helping people log into their email, helping people send emails and stuff like that, mm-hmm. helping people make phone calls. Did that for about a year. Got from 9K to 30K. Now at 30K, that time studio session is like 10K. So every month I'll have like 10K. So I organized my brother, Jesse, Ice, all the young people in that
mm-hmm.
area.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to form a label called Righteous Era, called Loopy Records. And we have our producers. One of our producers is a producer, at the time, is a producer called Ikeli.
Who now, I know Ikeli.
Ikeli works for Empower. He's like the head of music.
Mm.
He's produced for everyone from Wiz to, you know. And he was my senior in secondary school. So you're going to be a producer. Jesse was also, Jesse was a dancer and superstar.
So you just assigned them roles.
We organized, we did photo shoots, started doing some artwork. I had another friend, Eddie Lapang,
mm-hmm.
who was like a graphic designer. You're going to be our head of graphics, you know. And we set it out. And then I would just use the money to pay for studio sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I was going to be the artist. I thought I'm going to put Jesse on and put all these other people on. But as we call the day studio now, you know, people were not so serious. So I would just start recording music. And then one song I recorded got to the ears of Audu, who was the head of Chocolate, who was starting Chocolate City and had signed Jeremiah Giang.
In Jos.
Audu was in Abuja at the time.
Right.
Yes, but right. He was signing Jeremiah. Jeremiah had this big song. Do you remember? Yeah. So, signed Jeremiah. Jeremiah and I are like, we've known each other since we were like babies.
Yeah.
So, and at the time, back to the thing I was saying about mopping. Once I got back to Jos, I just make myself useful.
Work.
So, I started managing Jeremiah too as well. I'm like, you're very talented, but I think if you have a team around you,
it's so great.
I would organize, would go to take him to events and stuff like that. Then comes Chocolate City. These guys, you know, they have some cars, they have some small money. They find 2K that time. They get like, they go flash 20K. We go, hey, oh boy, yo, we done made it.
Yeah.
And Jeremiah sort of got signed. And and through that, now I'm hustling on this side. So in fact, I had so many hustles. I was doing the music hustle on one side. one of the other partners at Chocolate City, Paul, used to be a brand manager for one of the brands, a cigarette brand.
Mm-hmm.
So he always needed someone to help him do like photographs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he just found I was very diligent. Yeah. Again, the guy that mops. So he would tell me, I want to organize an event. I'll say, no problem. Tell me what you need. He would give me a budget. I'll return money back to him.
Hey.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Don't do that.
In the tell me, I'll say, maybe the budget now 50K. He go give me maybe like 40K based on, you know what I'm saying? Say,
mm-hmm.
let me under budget. Maybe I ask him for 30K. He go say, okay, no problem. I have 35K. He go for himself. Say, how is this guy going to do it? At the end of the project, I'll come back and say, I have 12K for you.
Emma, you so, remember those people who say, I know they like to work with them because they will cut.
I am for sure one of those people.
Hey.
Right? For sure. So, or let's say I was for sure one of those people. Okay, yeah. So,
well, things are passed too.
Yeah.
Because I don't like working with some people. Let us use the budgets. It is for a reason.
See, oh, things are passed away. Yeah. I love it. But
we must have been that hands-on for people to trust you a lot with their.
So imagine now from the group of these guys, Aldo Paul, they just see this young man that is just
on it.
I'm managing Jeremiah, I'm producing music, and then this one song now that I recorded just went through this ecosystem.
So how are you distributing your music? Because you're not in Lagos, right? So Just is also like, I know that Lagos is the hub for everything, entertainment,
yeah.
right? So
yeah.
How were you able to distribute the song to the point where people were already hearing it in Abuja?
No, nobody had heard it now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in our ecosystem.
Right.
You know, you make a song, people in the studio have heard it.
Mm-hmm.
You put it out with your friends. You say you're putting it out. At the time, maybe there's Facebook. You put it on Facebook or MySpace, something like that.
What platforms? Like, so there was no like TV channels, radio wasn't?
I mean, we didn't have access to that. Like Ice Prince at the time was much younger.
Mm-hmm.
And Ice Prince was, there's an OAP, one of the big OAPs in Jos. Ice Prince was their landlord. Ice Prince's family estate
mm-hmm.
Was housing this guy. So yeah. Ice Prince used to get on radio, you know, but
right.
the rest of us, it was only through the fact that we were just working so hard and building community and putting out music. We are organizing our own shows. I used to do something called jam session. Basically, we take our studio equipment, we set it up in a room and we perform for 2-3 hours. Do you know what I'm saying?
To people.
We just inviting people in our estate. And yeah. it grew to like 2,000, 3,000 people, you know. So I had like a whole community of mm-hmm. entertainment, you know, like the shows we had a studio, we're doing all this stuff. And I think at the right time, it just channeled into a deal at Chocolate mm-hmm. City. And to be honest with you, I'm not saying this. Let me not say why I'm not saying it. I'm mm-hmm. saying it for the benefit of young people that don't know what to do next. I'll say that if you stay focused on the thing that's in front of you, people are going to notice how hard you work. Even if the thing you're doing is like mopping.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're working in a place and you see somebody that mops with diligence. 7 a.m. they're there, they look clean, they get out the mop, they do it, they're smiling, they say, you're going to notice.
Yeah.
That person does it for 2 months. And then when an opportunity opens up, it always goes to those people, you know. And I felt like I was just one of those kids at the time. By the time I came to Lagos now, imagine a rapper that's been doing shows, been organizing studio sessions, been writing, been managing artists. So it was like the rest of the game was in slow motion and I was in full speed.
Okay, so let's break it down. So Aldo finds you.
Yes.
And tells you to come to Lagos or Abuja.
So Jeremiah got signed to Chocolate City. Because I was close to Jeremiah, I would travel with Jeremiah. So I started meeting Aldo and them.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was working with Paul, who is Aldo's partner in okay. Jos. Different sector.
Right.
Me and Paul have our own relationship in Jos. In fact, right. the day that Paul told Aldo, there's this guy I think you should sign. Aldo was also telling him, there's this guy I think we should sign. Aldo had heard his song. He was telling Paul, we should sign this guy. Mm-hmm. Paul had heard me perform somewhere. Mm-hmm. I was saying, yeah, I heard it. I know you heard someone, but there's a rapper I know in Jos.
Mm-hmm.
And they discovered it was the same person
right.
that you were talking about.
Right.
And then from there, now it was his own journey. Because at the time, Aldo was a young label owner, didn't have the funding. So I still had to figure it out. You know, so through one of our trips, I met Genie in Enugu
mm-hmm.
in 2006.
Okay.
2006. We went to do a show. There's so many parts of the show, but when we arrived at the show, I remember that Waji was there. She was an upcoming artist in Enugu at the time too. Yeah. And I went as Jeremiah's PA.
Right.
But Jeremiah was like, ah, this guy can rap. Get on stage. So when I got on stage, the whole crowd went crazy. The show was Jeremiah and Genie.
Right.
And later on, we're hanging out. Jeremiah was like, am I rap, rap, rap? And I rapped and Genie heard. This time, Genie was on Sound City in Lagos.
Right.
So Genie said, I have a program. I want you to come to Lagos.
Right.
This is how I now came and stayed with Genie. And because I was so organized and I had all this studio and everything, Genie and I were able to build a sustainable friendship. Mm-hmm. I felt where I was like, I can do production. I can do so and so. He's like, fine. I moved into his house with a bunch of his other friends. Mex, who shot the video for Safe. These guys are like big guys now in production space.
Yeah.
Just a young group of us. We're like 5-6 of us living in the house. At first in Bode Thomas. And then we moved to Onipan. You know, sleep on the floor in the living room, you know, and just have fun. That young, early stage.
Yeah.
And go back to Jos. You know, go to Abuja sometimes. Try and get as much money as I can. Come back to Lagos.
Mm-hmm.
Hustle. Go back to Jos. But what I had in Jos allowed me to be very, even at a in a small space, allowed me to be very dominant because I could produce.
Mm-hmm.
I had my studio back in Jos. Mm-hmm. I had my community. I had my shows. I had fan base already growing in Jos. Yeah. I already had so much experience performing, so I could go from place to place. And, you know, it just helped me grow really quickly.
So when did the big break? Because, you know, you can be hustling and hustling and hustling and you would just realize that you finally found that big break. Or the one song, just takes one song to say, you know.
I think that song arguably could be Safe.
Yeah.
I had Crowd Mentality before then.
Yeah.
And Crowd Mentality is when I became like an artist. It's like when they start counting your timesheets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I've been making music before then. So Crowd Mentality 2007, then I won an award, Headies Award.
Yeah.
You know, if you guys can put the clip of me in that, it's a different MI. You see the real Jude coming from Joss there.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I shouted when I got the award, ah! I remember that Joss was on fire that day. People were crying, like, what? This Jude guy. Imagine, like, music was, it looked so distant. It was like Keke and D1 and all these big hummers. And we had like poor kids in Jos.
Mm-hmm.
And now one of us, without having
any
father, brother, I didn't even know anyone in Lagos.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Is now an award winner, best rap single. And I felt like for most of the young artists in Jos, that just changed everything. They just were like, okay. Jesse, Ice Prince, all of them, they were like, okay, it can be done.
So they moved in.
Omar. People start to move, and the move, like, one of the people that moved with us now is now the CEO of Chocolate City, Abuchi.
Right.
He was his engineer at the time in the studio. Mm-hmm. So people just came and found a way, you know, as Nigerians, you said, spoke about it, that resilience.
Yeah. Tell me about life going forward. So from that moment when Safe happened, you know, tell me about the trajectory going forward. So your siblings move. I mean, your team, they moved. Tell me about what happened going forward. Because the career just kicked off from that.
This is a good question because, I moved in with Genie in, let's say, 2006. Genie and I became like proper roommates, like, let's say, 2007. Mm-hmm. Two of us in the house. And then my Jesse, Ice Prince and Abuchi came and were living with me at Genie's place.
Mm-hmm.
Till like 2009, we moved to our own house in Abanikoro. Oh, happy day. Mm-hmm. The 2 days when we bought our first car. End of discussion, Honda.
Hey, that Mutu.
My dear brother, me, Jesse, and Ice Prince were driving through the city of Lagos. We could not believe
that this was your life.
We made it now.
Yes, not we from owned Joss.
A Honda
Accord in Obanikuru.
And we're moving in one Accord.
Ah!
Do you understand?
I love it.
What more is there to say? Is the end of discussion, you know?
Yes. Car rap fan of our world.
So, and then when we moved into our own house as well.
Yeah.
But we moved into our... I remember just being like, man, we've moved into our own apartment.
Where was the apartment?
Obanikoro.
Okay, Obanikoro still.
And that house is still within the Chocolate City. It's still being occupied by someone within the Chocolate City ecosystem.
Oh, that's amazing.
Up till today. More than... we moved in 2008, so like 15 years now. We've kept that property. And it was a lot of happy times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of... there's a point in my career where I was talking a lot about the Chocolate City breakup. Because at this time, Jesse and Ice Prince were like closest friends.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse, Ice Prince and Abuchi were such a closely tight-knit unit.
Mm-hmm.
We used to make music all together. We used to collaborate on songs. There was a lot of healthy competition.
Right.
You know, life was just simpler. We could share easier. But it was also very tough. You know, no money. And it changes the dynamics because now, you know, even though I was sort of the leader already from Joss,
mm-hmm.
you know, now everybody has to now start figuring out themselves.
Mm.
And because I came from America, I was giving my people American rules. When we moved to the house, I'm like, everybody here is going to pay rent. You know what I'm saying? I did it because I knew that having responsibilities forces you.
To be, yeah.
It forces you. So I'll tell this story about Ice Prince. And for every Ice Prince fan out there, this is all you need to know about Ice Prince. So when I asked, the first time I called everybody in the house, I was like, we were like 6-7 guys here. I want everybody to pay 30K rent. I'm paying for the house. The house was maybe like 2 million naira. I'm going to pay the rent. But our monthly bills are like, let's say 200K. Internet, food, blah, blah, blah. I want everybody here to contribute. That's the prerequisite for staying in this house. The first few people that left were one of them was my Egbon, and one of them was my classmate from school. They could even, these ones I have experience in life. They're like, man, we out of here, man. What kind of wickedness is these people that left?
We told the money I'm making as it.
Ice Prince, who was the youngest in the house, he came to my room and he said, "Am I? But you know I don't have any money. Why are you asking me to pay rent?" And the question was so sincere that I said to him, "Ice Prince, because I feel like you are already valuable enough to make money,
mm-hmm.
and that the money is already out there. Some other artist is collecting that money. So I'm giving you this thing. I'm not going to kick you out, but I'm giving you this thing so that you start paying this rent. And from that moment, you know that you have a claim. I want you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So Ice Prince, I want you to go out and start looking for opportunities." Do you know the next morning, like 8 a.m., Ice Prince got up and went out and he found a job that day. He booked a tour to work with Sprite, 30 gigs across the country.
Mm-hmm.
When Ice Prince went and came from that DC, now imagine a young artist, now he went to Enugu, went to Oweri, went to Ilesha, went to all these places. He saw Nigeria in a new way. When he came back, immediately recorded Oluku and all those records. He even gave me African Rapper number one. He came back and became a hit machine immediately. He's like, he saw Nigeria. Now, let's go back to the moment of the rent.
Right.
That told me everything I needed to know about Ice Prince. Like, he heard this thing. Rather than speculate, he was like, tell me, explain to me.
Mm-hmm.
When he understood it, he was like, I can do this. And he went and got it done. And, you know, when people talk about, like, who I regard as some of the greatest rappers of all time, I feel like Ice Prince always gets neglected in the conversation for his real impact. We have to remember what Ice Prince did for rap.
Right.
Ice Prince was the guy that had global hip-hop dominance.
True.
From Oleku to that period, like South Africa, he was just hit after hit after hit. When we started doing international artists, Ice Prince was one of the first. Now, international artists, Ice Prince was recording with French Montana, all these guys going to the US.
Yeah, true.
All them BT Awards, Ice Prince was the nominee.
Yeah, true.
You know? And I think it's just because he's just a chill, you know? He doesn't toot his own horn. He stays in his own lane. People don't really, you know, he should be in every conversation he's in. I think he should be in top three conversations. Like, he's really that impactful. He made such a difference to the genre and to Afrobeats and that movement forward. Ice Prince was there the whole time with Wiz, David, all those guys as he went along, you know? So shout out to Ice.
Shout out to Ice Prince.
Have you had him on the pod?
No, I've not. I know.
You're going to have stories for you, man.
Yeah, I know him. tell me about your relationship with Jesse, your brother.
Jesse Jacks, the greatest.
So Jesse Jacks was like, I feel like he's great, but I feel like he just never wanted to be out there too much.
Yeah.
I feel like he wanted the work to be out there more.
Yeah.
I've never seen Jesse do like interviews or
yeah.
things. He was just very, I knew he's very talented, but he was very
It was giving me Sia vibes. You know? Yeah. Sia doesn't want to be seen. And,
yeah. Good. Yeah, that's a good analogy. So there's a guy in our city called Piruit. He's a basketball legend to us. Piruit used to score like Michael Jordan used to score in the NBA in Joss. But because of where he's from, he would never be appreciated in his lifetime for the things he can do. I know we all have someone like that. To me, Jesse Jags is one of those artists. Like, I look at Jesse Jags the way I look at Bob Marley. You know, like, here is somebody that, as God was creating people, he said, your own gift will be music. You understand? The thing about those people is that they are so deep and they're so powerful that a lot of times they are misunderstood. And a lot of times they show up in the wrong place and they're never fully appreciated. Right. You know? But you just have to talk to somebody that really understands Jesse Jags' music to know, like, the link between Jesse and his fans is, like, visceral. And I, as a younger brother, as an older brother, I saw it very early on. In fact, early on, I had to contend. Because, remember, I was the leader.
Yes.
If I did jealous my brother,
it was the first. Sure.
I go fuck up. I no go give him opportunity. So even before we left Joss, I had to sit with myself. And say to myself, either you step down as a leader or you commit yourself to making sure that if Jesse is the star,
you
get out of the way.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing. Early on, Jesse was the star. So before I blew up, Jesse had one song called Bend Down Low. The minute he recorded this song, all of us in the studio, we were like,
fuck.
So even when I started pitching us as a team to Chocolate City, I had to work a lot of times when people were ignoring me and they were like, no, this is the song. This is the song. This is the song. This is the song. And I don't know if Jesse even knows this, but it was a conflict for me at the time. And I had to be like, okay, I need to do the right thing. I make sure that everybody on my team gets on. And so I'm glad that I resolved it early on internally with me because a lot of times as a human being, you have emotions that you don't know what to do with and you carry on. But I was like, this guy is just so great. And outside of the fact that he's my blood brother, all that, he's just a great artist that deserves. So I just went full in and immediately I could, as soon as my own stuff had come out and done well, immediately I could. I was like, Jesse. Jesse just went to Abuja while the company was still trying to figure it out, put out Waiting Day. Explosion. And the rest is history, you know? But my relationship with him, we've gone through a lot. You know, I'm going to speak as honestly as I've ever spoken about that relationship here. Because to say that, first of all, we are brothers. Do you have a brother?
Yeah, I have.
Do you have a good relationship with your
brother? Oh, yeah. A very healthy one.
Brothers, like when you're somebody as siblings, there's a layer, especially if you grew up in a healthy ecosystem. No matter what happens in business, there's a layer.
Yeah.
And between me and Jesse, that's never changed.
Right.
So even people see us, Chocolate City, blah, 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 all that stuff. When Jesse and I have been in a room, it's always been love.
Okay.
As an older brother, I've also had to learn how to listen to him because he has so much respect for me that sometimes he would just make himself small in the room just out of respect for me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've also had some learning to do with being able to say over time, like, but I would say that maybe we're in the best phase of our relationship as brothers now. Like, when I go to Joss, Jesse lives in the most beautiful, like, home in Joss. Oh, my God. Just peaceful. I just want to go to that balcony, sit, chat with him. We chat for hours, catch up, we laugh. He's in a great space in his life. And I think Jesse's going to make music. Like, I think now we're going to see Jesse Jags. Now. Like,
he's still gonna do music.
He's one of those artists. It's like there are some artists that their timeless music is not about Are They Young or Are They Hot or genre de pop.
Because they love to do it.
Isabi. I'm a musician. I was created to make music. And those musicians make music, they are 70, they're 80. You know, Jesse's one of those. He's a gift to Nigerian music, you know. May the fates be kind to him for him to continue to bless us with his gift. You know, I don't think he's going to be an artist that's a seasonal, like, I'm always current. But just like he did, people forget he came out with Waiting Day. It changed music.
Mm-hmm.
she disappeared. He came back with Dynation Come, which had that raga sound. Look, I mean, you look at the genre now. Everybody's doing some form of patois or something. Mm-hmm. Jesse Jacks was the person that came out. I'ma murder them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing Bad Girl, all these songs. And all of a sudden, people were like, oh, this vibe fits in. And he disappeared. He started putting out deep hip-hop music. He disappeared. We're waiting for the Emperor to return and bless us again. And we know when he comes, he's going to change the game again.
The Emperor, the Conqueror, the Lion is coming. Okay, so then, I said it before, like, I don't listen to rap, right? But I listened. I can rap some of your songs. Like, it's really the album that...
MI2.
Is
Yeah, we Action Film.
Yes. I'll be a dog for Action Film. Thank you, flowers.
I really need these flowers, man.
These flowers.
Really, thank you.
MI, I know they listen to rap. You listen to me, I'll be gospel. If you know, Bitasha comes, so Sissy Winers, I know they listen. We listened to that album so much so that I know every song from it.
Yeah.
I want to know the creative process. And there were two albums, yeah, too, but like the first and the second one.
Yeah.
What was the creative process like? Because I did a lot of literature in school, right? And at the time, I was in secondary school where I was an A student in literature. Then there was rap. So I understood poems and how to be poetic and everything. So when I used to listen to it as a child, I'm just like, this guy. It takes a lot. I feel like rappers are some of the smartest people.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of sense or intelligence to be able to pull words together to make sense that much. And for every time that you opened your mouth, it made so much sense. You know, I probably would have listened to a song like 3-4 times and randomly just like, oh, that's what he meant. This guy's brilliant. You know, that's how brilliant the albums were. How did you make those albums? What was the creative process like? Were you high on something? Were you high with the most high? Like, you have to give me context. Those albums are classics.
I was just mopping, man. I was just mopping.
This is your mopping.
Yeah, where other artists are partying, I'm writing the verse again.
Mm.
You know, I know my brother. So I already know that there are sharks out there because I can look at Jesse and be like, Omo, art is bad. So I know that I have to beat you in the studio. I have to beat you with my work ethic.
So you were competitive at...
In fact, part of the reason, the competitive part of me is probably the part that even as braggadocious as I was, I think that people don't really know about me. I'm insanely competitive. Like, it spoils relationships. Where I play football and places like that, I go too hard. So I just worked hard, man. I just take, like, there's a song, Beef. To me, Beef is like, to me, Beef is the best Nigerian rap song. Because even if people don't know that they know there's rap, if I start rapping it, see them.
They want to beef me.
The song forces you to follow it. Yes. Now that they see BET, now that I be frequently on the TV, they want to go there, they can afford the TP. See, my motto is do more, talk less. Never get mad at another man's success. So when people try to make sure I chop less, I say, no, be your fault.
You're just jobless.
Nonsense. But do you. And keep missing, Yakubu. Mm-hmm. And even the line about Yakubu, like, do you. But keep missing. Like, Yakubu missed one clean goal.
Oh, right.
Yakubu missed a World Cup goal that would have kept us in the competition. The net was open and they passed the ball to you. You missed it. So I say, keep missing, Yakubu. But here's some advice if you still want to walk down the road, go hug Transformer. Mm-hmm. Go find a cliff and do a Jimmy Jad. Find a cliff, do a Jimmy Jad. What's Jimmy Jad's program called?
Jump Off.
Go find a cliff and do a Jimmy Jad.
Good, I beg.
Jump Off.
Please, a round of applause.
You know what I'm saying?
No, you gave us lyrics for days.
I wrote this verse 8 times, this song 8 times, to get it perfect. There's a line in the third verse where I say, people wonder how I'd be in, how I would fry when I sat in the sun through the weekend, believing if I work hard, I would reach then. What are the 3 days of the weekend?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Saturday, Sunday. How I would fry as I sat in the sun through the weekend, believing when I work hard, I would reach it. Like,
stop it.
Those verses.
Do you know what I just an idea for you or your content? How can we bring back these lyrics to social media in a way that, I don't know, this should be a way to drive these lyrics on TikTok.
Yeah.
like just analyze his lyrics.
Yeah. And I did the work, Temi Son. Like, this, you know, one of my feelings about Nigeria is that we don't really have a meritocracy. Yeah. And that holds Nigerians back.
Yeah.
Because people can win without doing any of the work. Do you know what I'm saying? But I can just say, I can speak for MI to say that MI worked. Those verses are, and I did it because I would look at Mood 9, I would look at Rugged, I would be like, these guys have given us so much. I have this opportunity. I want to say these things. And I just, you know, rap after rap after rap after rap after rap after rap. And I look back now. In fact, this morning I was running. I run every morning. And there was one of my verses that was in my head. And I was doing the same thing. I was talking through the verse, just trying to remember the verse. And I was like, you bad who? Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But it's the you badness is not like I look at myself and I'm like, am I your special?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that. It's that I know that when it comes time to write a song, I'm going to take it more seriously.
Mm.
I'm going to mop the floor of that song.
Will you?
Do you know what I'm saying? Till it's shiny. You know what I mean? And when I see young people now, I always tell them, whatever your work is, practice excellence at this job.
Mm.
Because when you're at the heights, you're going to need to know when everybody else is playing, I know how to focus. You know what I'm saying? You're never going to run away from that in success. You're never going to be. You need to be able to be like, now is on me. You know, the higher you get. And that's what I just tap into. That's that analogy about mopping that I keep bringing back on. Mm-hmm. That's what it is for me. It's like, even right now on the things I'm working on, you know, sometimes you work in the dark for one day for something to be in the sun.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And in the dark, sometimes you're working for a year and nobody can see the results.
Yes.
You need to keep mopping.
Yeah.
Keep mopping, you know?
You know, there's a lot of behind the scenes that goes into becoming successful or anything that has to do with excellence. For you to be so excellent, there's so much work that has to go on behind the scenes, and people are not always ready to do that work.
Yeah,
I feel like you did that work because it even shows in the lyrics. Because I imagine that you probably read a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because for you to construct like that, it was also like the lyrics was not. We know we have a lot of freestyle these days. You know, people just talking. But it was proper, like English.
Yeah,
it was like. We're in school. Because now that you said this thing, I'm just like, that's what he meant. But like, before, I'm just like, okay, maybe one day I'll figure out this lyrics. There are also some lyrics that you had that I'm like, one day, we go figure out what this thing mean. Yeah. But it just looks good. It just sounded good.
We can do this. Like, I have some projects called the mixtapes. These were for really, like, illegal music. In illegal music, like, let me give you a simple one. This is talking about lyrics. I have a song that starts like this. Shorty, you're the one. I'm proud to be your man.
Mm-hmm.
Without you, I'm a zero. Together, we're a 10. If you think about the structure of those four lines, Shorty, you're the one. I'm proud to be your man. Without you, I'm a zero. Together, mm-hmm. we're a 10. You see, it's a short poem, but with a one and a zero, if you put them together, they become a 10. Do you know what I'm saying? Without you, I'm nothing. But when you're coming with me, we become a 10. We become the totality of everything. You know? That is the beauty of rap, you understand? And it's hitting in those things. In this same tape, I think the next song, I have a line where I say something about, a verbal pugilist. I spit into an iron mic. Now, this is now more lyrical, right? What's a pugilist? A fighter, right? So when you talk about pugilism, everybody knows boxing. Mm-hmm. That's basically the art of boxing relies on pugilism. Right, which is even a word. Where has anybody heard
but,
the
but
word
who says, pugilism? Which musician says pugilism?
But here's the point.
Where you learn that one
I
from?
I said
Rabbi,
verbal
please.
Pugilist. I spit into an iron mic. Mics are iron, Abby.
Mm-hmm.
And the line Iron Mike Tyson, right? Who is like one of the greatest pugilists of all time? Do you know what I'm saying? So with rap, you can take things and bend them and do so much with it. And at one layer, people are listening to you. And they think they understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But there's another layer where something is happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's going. And it's really beautiful when you can put both together. And it's beautiful to say. I have, I used to say during my career, I used to get beaten up about this a lot. I used to say I'm one of the greatest rappers in the world.
I agree.
And the reason I say so is because whether or not in my lifetime people say so, I want Nigerian audiences to know that we produced a rapper that whatever they could do there, we were doing
yes.
here.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I'm proud of that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Because let me touch on this, right? Because for you to be a rapper of this standard, you have to be extremely smart. It's such a poetic, like, people don't understand how poetic rappers are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And for you to take lyrics, first of all, you have to also be grounded. Like, you have to be reading. I assume that you have to read a lot for you to be able to twist words like that. Because pretty easy what you drop for me. Just, I was like,
people, you know, there's a third of my fans that they say, I heard this word from Ebai.
Yes.
I heard this word from Ebai. Yes. I heard this word from Ebai. I went and researched.
How much do you read?
Yeah.
Do you read at the time?
Yeah, I at the time when I was recording, I always read. It's one of the first things my father gave me. And it would even shock people the kind of books I read. I read, like now with the work I do, I read tech books. I read books about entrepreneurship. I read books about systems, management, consulting. Right. In fact, there's one book I saw the other day called High Output Management. I tried to read this book 6 years ago. It was completely foreign to me.
Yeah.
Now, because of what I'm working on, it's like pidgin now. It's so easy for me to understand. You know, but I would say to people, like, there's a statement I heard about reading that really hits me hard. This, even for people in the room. It's like the smartest people that have ever lived, before they died, they were like, shit, I know so much. How can I live it?
Put it into a book.
So the refusal to read
is
literally removing yourself from the best of human knowledge.
Mm.
Do you understand? And it's probably just an attitude you have because your early teachers made you feel bad. They called you stupid. They called you something. But you can unlearn that and spend as much of your time reading. There's so much you learn about the world.
Mm-hmm.
There are questions that you have. Everything you want to say about marriage has been written. Everything you want to say about business has been written. Everything you want to say about media has been written by somebody that did it. Somebody that was probably number one globally. Do you know what I'm saying? And this is how you do it. This is step one, step two, step three, step four.
You know what somebody said about reading? Somebody said, you know, why reading is so important is because, you know, somebody who has had like 20, 30 years of experience decides that, you know what, I'm going to put this experience into a book. I'm going to sell it for $20.
Yeah.
And you turn down that offer.
$20.
That's that stupid.
What somebody's probably used $20 million to learn.
Yes.
And life. Not just $20 million, and life. They worked, they struggled, they failed.
Yeah.
They got accolades, they had experience. You know what I'm saying? As a CEO now, like my first run as CEO of Chocolate City, I was a lot of hard work, a lot of energy. But my business knowledge, I was learning on the job as I was going along. Now I can literally listen to Elon Musk, who maybe is the smartest entrepreneur that's ever lived. I can read about John D. Rockefeller. Like I was reading about Rockefeller. And like this guy, like I'll share a story so maybe anybody that's interested in reading, because I know Nigerians are very entrepreneurial. John D. Rockefeller, this story that I heard about him, he was in a bad business deal and he knew the deal was bad. He knew that the person he's working with is not going to help him. So he created a 2-year plan about how he's going to continuously remove this guy from this business over time. It took him 2 years and he never said a word to anybody about the plan. He just created a plan. This guy's going to destroy this business. I need to make a plan. He made the plan. Now, in business, a lot of times you need to think ahead 2-3 years, right? But I can read about how this guy thought about it and learn without having to go through it
and
myself.
Replicate.
Do you know what I'm saying? And replicate. I can read about, like, I can read anything. The world has so much knowledge.
Mm.
And the fact that we had such terrible teachers when we were growing up, teachers that beat us, told us you're stupid, they made this. This, you go to the back of the line, you be mumu, waiting, they created so much trauma around learning.
Yes.
Where we're naturally a learning people. Like we, all this camera shit and all this stuff we're doing, how do we do it? All this podcasting, we learned it. We built it ourselves, but we're afraid of learning from books because we had a bad experience generally there. You know what I'm saying? But it's something as an adult, I think, like for you now, there are people that Like, you're one of Nigeria's top brands, you know?
By the grace of God?
Yeah, the people have written books about branding. Yeah. Everything you need to know about what you should do next from here to becoming a global brand is in the book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? By someone that was like you. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? And went through it. Like the owner of Vogue, the owner of all these people.
All the greats.
Everyone.
Is a memoir or something, Sha.
You know, and it's all there.
Yeah.
You know,
so, I enjoy reading memoir. I feel like I can do a bit of fiction, but my best form of reading is, you know, I love memoirs because I love to read about the lives of great people.
Yeah.
And you know, if you can put, they won't tell you everything in the book, yeah, but
they will color
it just gives you an idea of, like, you know, yeah, what life was for this person, and yeah, you know, and you can relate to it.
Yeah.
It's just, guys, you guys should read more. Tell me about your time as CEO at Chocolate City.
Man, so much sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
So much sacrifice. So much learning. So much planting without planting in faith. Let me put that. Life changing. And yeah, you know me, I mean, like, I feel as if I always break down answers into, like, serious, mm-hmm, into serious things, but that's how I would encapsulate it. Now, let me add a little bit of narrative there. Aldo one day called me. I remember I had a red Range Rover at that time. I was driving back to Lekki, flexing. Mm-hmm. I went to the office in, we had an office. I had an office. I had a record label, Loopy Records, on the mainland. So I was driving back from Agada. And Aldo said, I want you to be the CEO of Chocolate City. I think my time here is done. Mama, I almost crashed the car. CEO of a record label. I'd never thought about it before then. But then he explained to me, like, he felt like he didn't have so much to give at the time anymore for the label point of view. He wanted to go do other things. And with all the challenges we had at the time, we had a lot of challenges. Jesse was leaving. Brymo was leaving. Ice Prince was like, am I sure I'm staying? We didn't really have a sustainability plan. A lot of the artists that were there at the time, we had a business on the island, but the staff there hadn't really built the systems they needed to do. It was, you know, so I just jumped in, mistake after mistake, try after try, error after error. But immediately it became clear to me that we didn't have enough money to do what we needed to do. We can't compete. And I say so respectfully, but what we colloquially call the Yahoo Boy money was entering into music at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was now also, this is like 2015, people like DMW. You know, when there was a period when David had taken off, where they were like, okay, we're going to really take it seriously. And the budget, Dibanj, I think, was one of those people, DMW, it just became a different game in mm-hmm. terms of the marketing budget, you know. And we didn't have the money at the time, you know, we're big brand. So I said, okay, what we can do, we can build a sustainability plan. Let's find the next stars. So we built that ecosystem. And out of that ecosystem, let me list the artists that came out. Caveman, Black Bones, CK, what's her name? Candy Bleaks, and many more artists. I'm not going to take credit for a lot of these other artists because it's not direct. But, you know, from a label point of view, mm-hmm. when you help one artist, that artist normally has two or three friends that can get closer. They can get on a collab and now they're discovered by someone else. And, you know, and the program worked. We really slaved hard for it. Mm-hmm. I had an amazing team. Toda, Abuchi, Luz mm-hmm. Kenon, AQ, L3, Biola. I'm forgetting so many people that worked with me. But that team, we just focus. We're going to find the next stars of the future. We're going to build systems around it. We're going to do, and we set to do the work. And we were successful. We found stars and we sold the business in 2019 to Warner. So
amazing.
That was,
I feel like you still have some.
A lot to say, Abby.
Anyway, but I'm going to move on because time is fast spent, right? I want to put this in a way that is not disrespectful to the work that you have done. But you know how some people say that, you know, rap is not a thing in Nigeria anymore. Yeah. MI was the last great rapper from Nigeria. Yeah. We've seen tweets about that. What do you feel about the conversation around rap now in Nigeria?
Yeah.
Especially with the work that you've done.
Yeah. You know, so first of all, let's answer this in two ways. Why is rap valuable? Let's talk to that. And then secondly, the conversation around rap and rap's place in Nigeria's history.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so rap is valuable because there's some trauma that people go through that other genres of music can't speak to.
Fair enough.
You understand? And rap, when black, beaten, bruised, degraded young men were like, we're going to take back our dignity. You know, hip hop is one of the art forms that emerged. It's so powerful. I have lines like a DMX line. He says, I wasn't given the chance of being a child with a father. My only talent is being able to survive when things get harder. My balance in the high beams of life keep my dreams afloat. It's like what we're talking about. Like we develop this skill of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine hearing somebody say that as a poem. And this guy is a drug dealer, robber. So you're seeing the juxtaposition of this person's intelligence, but their pain at the same time. Rap is the only genre. And especially with what we've gone through in our world, the stories of Portable, Reminisce, Vector, Olamide, Da Green, and what those people have seen and what it means and how they share it with the world mm-hmm. is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Rap is not just that. It's contributed to Afrobeats. It incubated Afrobeats. The Afrobeat stars were first singing hooks on rappers' songs. They took the lingo, they took the song structure, they took the slangs. Yo, man, the outfits. They took so much from hip-hop. It's contributed to so much. It's such an important genre. Now, in Nigeria, only what is making the most money is valued. If people can critique Nigerian hip-hop on any other thing rather than it doesn't make as much money as Afrobeats. And we have to think about that as a people. It's the only thing that matters, how much you have. You know what I'm saying? And so, to me, it's a values conversation about Nigeria. They're not saying that, like, over the last few years, there's been Files, there's been SDC, there's been AQ, there's been Black Bones, there's been Odumodu Black, mm-hmm. there's been Boogie, there's been great rap music, you know, as we've gone through this period. But the argument now is, but you guys are broke compared to these other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that argument, hip-hop is just the victim in this conversation, but it's a Nigerian value system. It's how we look at the world. And to me, that's unfortunate. I don't even take it personally as a rapper. I realize that it's something that's broken in the larger context.
Mm.
It's going to affect how we elect people. It's going to affect who we see as celebrities. Is going to affect who we respect as pastors.
Right.
It's going to respect.
Who we respect generally is a thing.
Everything is going to frame our context.
Yeah.
That being said, I feel like there's also some stupidity around the conversation because right now, if you go look at the charts right now, hip hop is dominating. And I would put it to you that there's never been a year that hip-hop didn't participate
right.
as the second genre in a strong way.
Mm.
You know, it's just, you know, in life, sometimes, Timison, there'll be a story about you. And no matter what you say, that story will be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, human beings, truly, human beings in large groups are not very smart. You know, do you know that it was a crowd that was saying, crucify him. Crucify him.
Mm-hmm.
Crucify him. I have a song where I said, it's on my last album about say the shit is a war zone, it's a minefield. I've been studying the data just like a scientist. So you ask a mob for advice, you end up killing Jesus Christ. You know what I'm saying? If you go and ask the crowd, what should we do?
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? The wisdom is not in crowds. So when I hear the crowd speak, I just say to rappers, fix up, keep moving.
Mm.
Because what matters is that you can take care of your family.
Mm.
And now I think in that regard, rap is even better off than Afrobeats. Most rappers are building into ecosystems. They're getting other jobs. they're creating communities around. And I think rap is going to continue to do this thing. One more thing I'll say, I'm not abandoning the genre.
Mm-hmm.
Even in what I'm doing right now, I want to give all my life to hip hop because hip hop has given me so much. And as you said, like, it is poetry. Mm-hmm. You go and listen to MI's songs, there's a story about what it meant to be a Nigerian that's more clear because it was written in raps. Do you understand? Money slow to enter. I didn't grow poor. I didn't grow rich. I was growing through the life, but we're in a ditch. I would look at some of my friends. It's a story. And you can listen to other songs without a chop my money. But the poets, the African poets were also important. They're also in the museum.
Yeah.
They should also be in the museum. And as a people, we should be like, this is our artifact too as well. We also have music. We also, imagine us being like, fuck those artifacts from England. How much money do they make? We only want Afrobeats. It's sort of what we're doing to hip hop.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's, you know, again, mobs can be stupid. We can make statements that would be like, later you look back and you're like, we're really all saying that. You know?
You know, one of the things that I've realized in this industry that we're in, you know, beyond the glitz, the glamour, the girls, the boys, the access to everything, you know. Peace of mind comes when you just find that one person that, you know, you love and they love you back. How did you find Eniola?
How did I find her? Yeah. I went through a breakup. That breakup made me say, fix up. You, Emma, should fix up your life. So I fixed up my life. In fact, when I fixed up my life, honestly, being honest, I was, in my mind, I was saying to myself, I'm going to get back with my ex. You know, I'm going to take some time off, really fix on all this stuff, get back with my ex. And that just didn't happen. You know, time, we started drifting apart. We're not talking. And then at this point, one day I was like, hey, you know what? I feel like I'm in a place in my life now where I've done a lot of self-work and I want to meet someone. So I was like, how do you meet? You know, as a celebrity, how do you meet? How do you date?
You go on apps?
I even tried it once. I think I have some some accounts on Tinder. But there's no way. There's no way because there's no way I discovered that everybody's a real estate agent on it. You just see Abigail. What's your work? Real estate. Age 23, 22. But anyway, so I was like, oh, I'll just ask people. So I asked Audu, and Audu was like, yeah, you know, this girl.
You literally asked Audu.
Yeah, I was like, hey, you know, I'm ready to. I was asking people. Hey, I think I would like to meet
someone new.
Women. But let me tell you something. During the self-work, I saw myself differently as well. And I valued myself differently. So I was like, oh, I'm going to look for an amazing partner now. Like, what am I doing? Like, this nobody, they push me. Nobody, they rush me. Let me find best of the best.
Yeah.
So it was not just that, oh, please help me, looking for somebody. I was like, let me send out the scouts into the world to return back to me with a list of the fair maidens that I shall... But, and then Audi was like, you should... there's this girl called Eniola Mafe. And I was like, whoa.
Who's that?
Okay, let's see. He sent me her picture. He sent me, you know, he was saying it. I pulled her up on Instagram. Now, when I was younger, I used to say that the woman I want to marry, this was a kid, has an afro. I loved afros when I was a child. So I pulled up her DP and she had an afro.
Was that when you decided that she was the one?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I was like, I went on her page. I'm like, are you guys telling me that this woman is not married? Like, that was my first thought. Like, is it that she's divorced? Like, based on what I'm seeing, like, how she looks, the things she's into, are you guys actually letting me say that?
Nobody has taken this.
You know, when you see those kind of opportunity, you go sit up.
Say, ha.
You go sit up and say, what did they go on here? Mm-hmm. So, and I hit her up on, I followed her, you know, just as a idea, you know. And then the next day, if you know Eniola, she loves everyone. So I don't even think she even put anything together. She just saw a story on my, saw something on my stories. She responded to it the next day. We started chatting. Timison, literally, as soon as we started talking, we we never stopped talking. We gisted. Like, we gisted for, the next time we spoke for 2 hours. This is the second time that we spoke. The third time we spoke for 3 hours. 3 weeks into talking to her. Now, my whole community, Seth, in a way, they were, I felt like the expectation was not that I was going to come with a new relationship, you know, at the time. 3 weeks, I don't call my guy loose. Ah, oh boy, problem day, problem day. Like 2 months later, she was coming to Nigeria. Do you know, my niece tells a story, because I have a very close relationship with my niece. Shout out to you, Jade. And she tells the story. She says, she'd always seen me with other women, but when she just saw me with Anyola, she was like, oh, from day one, he's going to marry this one. And what part of the reason that, because I knew she was coming to the house, I went and she was going to come by and visit. I went and changed all like the pots and pans. You know when you're on Bachelor Vibes?
Yeah.
I was like, Omo.
What's going on here?
Because I don't already sit up. It's not the joke for this same world where we did.
So and you're really ready to marry. You're ready to settle down. And
I don't even know if I thought it was going to be my marriage. I didn't think it in that way. But when I met Anyola, I realized that I just met someone whose story I wanted to continue being part of. And that's just what marriage is. Marriage is not telling people, okay, we've agreed this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying? And so everything then just flowed from there. Mm. Like up till last night, we were talking about it and we're just like, she was talking about our friendship, you know, and it's like, hey, I enjoy being your friend, you know? And that's the way I look at it. Like I tell most young people, I'll say so to you too as well, about relationships and marriage. And let's not even use the word marriage here, because I realize that many people watching it have different experiences of marriage. So the word means different things to many people. What I'm talking about is being a committed long-term relationship, right? I tell young people and all of you guys here, that feeling that you feel that, am I alone in this world? Is ever anyone ever going to get me? Is anyone going to understand
That's
me?
That's why I am.
No one is ever going to understand you.
Yeah.
You are actually alone.
A rude shock. I'm shocked.
The quicker you can accept that as reality, the more mature you'll be about life. Now, it's nobody's job to understand you, because they can never. But now that you know you're alone, it actually makes sense for you to have a teammate. Like, if you have to go through life alone, it would actually be better for you to convince one other person to be like, hey, can we team up? I know you're alone. I'm alone too. These are my likes and wants. Let me see your likes and wants. Can we reach a negotiation and just look out for each other, both of us alone? And that if you look for a partner that way, your relationship would be even more healthy, because you're looking for things that are actually going to help you on your life path down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I was looking in that perspective, like I'm looking for somebody who's going to walk with me on my own journey in life. When I met her and I just saw her own pathway, it was very, 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 very easy for us to look at the plan. I remember we were so much in love in our first year that we used to have these moments where we would ask each other, are we infatuated? So we'll go online, we'll print out a list of things and be like, is this just dumb love? And we'll go through and say, if it's dumb love, then this will happen. We'll be like, are we this? They will say, okay, we're not. Okay, this may be real love, you know, because it was just such a strong feeling. But 1 year into marriage, I would say that I'm lucky. You know, I'm still trash. I'm a trash human trying to improve and trying to grow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But having someone that is your friend and has your back, do you know what I mean? Like one example I give about marriage is that there was a day I received the passcode for something and I didn't know where to keep it. And I was like, oh, I have a partner. I could just put it in our WhatsApp chat. And I know for sure that this password is safe, because what I want it for is what this person wants it for as well. I can't trust anybody else on earth. But this person, we're aligned in purpose. So here you go. This is my password for this thing. And I'm very grateful. Shout out to you, Annie. And I look forward to as many more years as we can do it and many years of learning.
I love a good love story. You know, it's so cute. Like, to hear you
I felt like I was being so boring about it. I'm breaking it down. Serious.
But, you know, it's so beautiful to see. Like, and I'm getting to learn how important finding love is. And, you know, but, you know, one of the things that really stuck out for me, you were saying, is that, you know, friendship is so important because there are days where you're not in love.
Yeah.
But that person is your friend.
Yeah.
So you look out for your friend, you care about your friend.
Yeah.
But does it? What changes when you get married? Because, you know, it's one thing for you to be dating and having a great time and being in love, I mean, be infatuated, right? But marriage is the seal. Like, we're in this together.
Yeah.
Vows have been taken. Yeah.
If I'm to be honest with you guys, I'll say that I think the real change in marriage is the cost of divorce. Like, once you marry, you can have any argument single people can have. You can behave anyhow single people behave. It's your choice. It's your life. However, if the other person says, fuck this, I'm not doing this anymore, both of you are going to pay a heavy price. The next 1 year or 2 years of your life are going to be in turmoil. Mm-hmm. And that changes the dynamic of every argument you have because the stakes are high now, you know? So I find as a man that I have to learn to draw my own boundary in the relationship. Because if things go too far, whether or not whoever's fault it was, I'm still going to pay the cost. I'm going to bear the cost, you know? And I feel like that's an area of growth. It's like you have to make up your minds in a committed relationship. There are things I will no longer do. Mm-hmm. Things I've told myself my whole life. If this person does this to me, I will never, and then you are with somebody, person does it to you and you say, do I have 20 million naira? Or do I have 100 million naira now to go through a divorce?
Is that how much people...
Think about it. When you get married, you move in together. Mm-hmm. You start sharing money. You mm-hmm. start sharing accounts. So even in the Nigeria setting where like patriarchy, a man run everything, like even the cost of her just leaving your house. Let's go back to the fucked up Nigerian example. I own everything. She's just my wife. Even the cost of just her family members coming, the conversation, like it takes a toll on you mentally, cost-wise. It is actually a visceral process to break away from somebody after marriage.
Mm.
And that's why you shouldn't go into it willfully. You shouldn't go into it playfully because leaving it is very difficult. You know, it's very, very difficult. This person has a legal right. Whatever you want to say, the person can say, yes, but I'm their spouse. And everybody in the whole world has agreed based on this piece of contract that this person has a right to, you know? So, but I would say that take your time knowing that you're alone. Like you, Temison, you're alone. You're alone. When you marry.
All I have is Jesus.
When you marry, your partner no go understand you. You go reach time when you have to look out for yourself.
Mm.
You have to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be strong. Mm-hmm. You have to be patient. You know, when that person can't be patient,
mm-hmm.
when that person can't show up, you have to be the one to show up for yourself first, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. even for the relationship. But most of the time, especially when it really matters, when you have no one else, you'll be like, but I have someone else.
Yeah.
You know, and having a human being that's on your side is the most important thing. One human being with you changes the world for you. So, it's worth doing.
It's married man advice. So, hey, love can change people.
Ooh. We have not even spoken. Even lovey-dovey?
It was so deep. Like, I'm sure Elila's going to watch them. Like, oh,
I just realized that. That's the Chocolate City logo on your hat.
Yeah. She's a music gal.
You know, I saw it earlier. I didn't even pay attention to it. But now I can see that, yeah. That's are you at Chocolate City? Okay.
I know a lot of people...
how can she be at Chocolate City and she's sitting down there?
No, because now in the workspace, a lot of young people have like...
Oh, yeah, she's one of those young work. People. Yeah, so, she's one of those ones. Yeah.
Shout out to CC and the whole family.
Anyway, so like before I let you go, let's talk about the work that you're currently doing because, I mean, as much as you're still doing a lot of music work, you're also doing work in like advocacy.
Yeah.
You run an agency now.
Yeah.
Tell me about that work.
Yeah, we're trying to solve a big problem. And the big problem is that creatives are not good with business.
Right.
They're not good with business, not because they're not intelligent, but because being creative requires for you to spend a lot of time on the creative side of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the creative side of your brain needs freedom. It doesn't need structure. So you have to emerge from your creative side of your brain to come and sign a contract. You don't know what's going on. You must trust someone. And over time, what those people have shown us, that those people take advantage of us. They give us bad splits on contracts. Agents take deals. They won't tell you how much they collected. They negotiate you down. They don't, you know. And it's a problem that has stopped most artists, most creatives in our sector from transitioning from being celebrities to becoming businesses.
Yeah.
You know, so Task is trying to solve that problem and trying to provide the infrastructure so that creatives at every level
mm-hmm.
can plug into our ecosystem and use our business tools and just do their work. Of course, this takes a lot of work. Like you're talking about building something that is not for creatives, for tech people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so getting this done is not something that, you know, a creative, just a creative can do. So, but it's the problem. It's my mission now. I don't know how to explain.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something you said there in the, when we were pre-gaming. You said, I don't want the creatives be coming behind me to go through what I went through.
Yeah.
Timmy son, what I went through and what I've been through, like, it's not just that. Like, I was the perfect creative. I'm the creative that when my label didn't have money, I said, don't worry, I'll figure it out. Let's use my equipment. Let's use my money. And even in those partnerships, I was taken advantage of. I'm the creative that helped so many artists. Told them, don't worry, I don't need anything from you. Go work with this person. And even in those relationships, I was taken advantage of. I'm the creative that I've put in 12, I have 12 projects. Do you know what I'm saying? I've put in so much work into music. I've performed, you ask about me, all these brands. I've performed for many brands. I've done favors for over every comedian, every artist. Mm-hmm. And even in those relationships, I was taken advantage of consistently. And so it's a problem. For me, I asked you a question earlier. What problem do you want to take with you before you die? This is the problem with me. Can we change the way the world interacts with creatives?
Mm-hmm.
That's the Task mission. We're going to change that. And it's been a lot of work, a lot of learning. Now, on the advocacy side, what we've done is we've told the nonprofits, you guys have a lot of opportunities for creatives. A lot. All this work you're doing, we want to change attitude on women's health. Mm-hmm. We want to do gender inclusion. Who do you think is going to make this change happen? It's creatives. You go hire all these NGOs and all these guys. Mm-hmm. They do great work. But now the problems of today is it's a culture problem. Mm-hmm. If young people don't believe you, if young people see you as an NGO, as a government, they're not going to connect to it and the message is going to get lost. And so the work we've done so far is to help nonprofits that really want to see change in society connect with creatives and move it forward. And we've been doing that for 3 years. I'm very, very proud of the work we do. We're going to scale next year, do a full agency.
Mm-hmm.
Have creatives on board. We're going to launch a platform too, like a tech platform for creatives to go on board and just grow. And this is going to be, I'm still going to make music, still push my music, but I feel as if having, in my opinion, successfully contributed to the Nigerian catalog of art,
mm-hmm.
like the Nigerian Museum of all time,
mm-hmm.
I've done a great job of contributing art to it.
Yes.
I can now look at the museum structure and be like, we need our own museum.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And start working on that. And that's what I'm working on now.
Thank you so much, Emma. Like, I wish that we could continue and just keep on talking because there's so many questions I have to ask you. But, you know, one of the things I would say is that, you know, in the Hall of Fame, you know, if we had, it's called the Hall of Fame, right? If we had that in Nigeria, you probably be top 10, you know, because you've really given so much to the industry and I respect you so much and well done on all the work that you're doing going forward. Before I let you go, finally, what would you call this chapter of your life if you were writing a book?
I love that question. I think that every chapter of your life, I'll call it the prelude.
This is your prelude?
Yeah.
This is your prelude. What's your copy of my own?
It's your prelude.
I
think that's the right way for us to look at the world.
Mm.
Imagine now, Timison, when your podcast now is on global charts, somebody asks you, what do you call this phase of your life? You say, this is the prelude. Then you now become like Ryan Seacrest.
Mm.
You now have a network. Somebody asks you, what's the phase of your life? You say, it's the prelude. You know, that's the way I look at it. Like, when I turned 40, I understood that, oh, when I was a boy before. Yes. I was a boy. Like, this is why over generations, they've been saying life begins at 40. They've known it. It's a, like, actual wisdom, because you, at 30, you're, you know a lot.
Are you saying my life hasn't started?
I've told you so many times. You know, was it 2 years ago when Temiso told me his age? I was physically sick. I'm like, how can you be so young and so accomplished?
I'll be working, though. I feel like I need to retire by 30. That's why I'm rushing.
You can't. But are you sure you want to retire by 30? So for 40 years, 40, 50 years.
I just want to marry rich. Mm. Do you know, like, marry somebody from, like, Saudi Arabia. The family doesn't want me to be in the public. I just work in the family business.
You know, I think you probably hate it. 40 years
old. Don't say that.
You know, you're an adventurer. You build things.
No, I will adventure in Saudi Arabia.
In the house. I'm walking around like, wow, I discovered a new room today.
I'm tired.
I hear that.
But I hear you. I know that, you know, I would never be comfortable just being maybe a stay-at-home husband or whatever. But we just need the amount of money that would not make us work this hard.
Yeah. I also, to be honest with you, like, there's also that phase in life. And that phase in life is that sometimes you've reached a level and you need to rest and reset.
Mm.
You know, sometimes, because you don't get to the next step without putting your second foot on the step where you were, without resting.
Right.
You climb, you rest. You climb, you rest. Mm. So if your body is telling you that, like, I don't try, you know, maybe you say, okay, the next year of my life is about consolidating where I am, resting, opening perspective, taking some courses, setting new goals and something. But I can tell you that having been at the phase in my life, I've had that year, 2019, as soon as Warner came into Chocolate City, I had enough money to do nothing. I had enough success to disappear. And I just disappeared. Just went to my house, sat down. I became so fat. I was eating. You know what I'm saying? I was just relaxing. I was going through breakup that time. So, babes.
Yeah.
I just enjoy my life, and it's not the same as knowing I have something to do and I must do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm waking up with that fire. You know, those times are better than being like, I've done it. Let me relax. You know, it's never as much fun as having purpose.
Thank you so much, Emma. Cheers to us and
cheers.
Our purpose in life and our prelude phase.
And I'm so glad we got to do this.
Yeah, I'm glad. Honestly.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.